Welcome to the second layer of our News Quiz selection box. Here's a favourite bonbon read for us by Peter Donaldson.
Commode chair, £4. Stool, £2.
It was a difficult year for the Labour government. At one point, they even slipped behind the Conservatives in the polls. But, of course, our panel were far more interested in Tony Blair's conference speech, during which he perspired like a man caught in a tropical monsoon.
Well, this is presumably our beloved leader, Tony Blair, who, you know, very much in tune with our confessional culture. He admitted to mistakes, but he felt that, you know, we should move on and achieve closure. And it was apparently an impressive, if slightly smelly, speech. But
he does sweat a lot for a thin lad, doesn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah.
Do you think it was a mistake, Andy, for him to wear that sauna in a suit that he got from the Innovations catalogue?
Yeah.
Busy Prime Minister, no time for a relaxing sauna, no problem. Have a sauna while making a keynote speech, no one will notice.
Shirt needs a spin dryer, really, isn't it?
You know what it is. You know what it is. All the high street fashions are made in Far Eastern sweatshops, and these days they're actually coming with the sweat built in.
I tell you what worried me intensely about the speech was he's developed this theme about, well, with hindsight, he says, I wouldn't have sanctioned the dome. And I really hope this hindsight business doesn't catch on with politicians, because I'm not sure I could stomach Mrs. Thatcher saying, well, of course, looking back, destroying Britain's industrial base was probably a mistake. If I had my time again, you know, and Slobodan Milosevic saying, well, you feel so silly when you think about it. But ethnic cleansing seemed like a good idea at the time. I mean, because I don't quite understand how the dome was such a deceptive idea.
Sounded so good at the time, I suppose, when someone said, yes, well, on this toxic waste ground, we'll build a big shed with nothing in it.
And
how could it fail?
All we need to break even is 12 million visitors a year.
He did go on, Blair, about how much he was listening, didn't he? Did you notice that, Andy? It was sort of, I'm listening to the road hauliers, but I'm also listening to the National Health, and I'm also listening to the pensioners. You think, sure, if all the voices he's listening to are actually real. You know. I'm listening to the Emperor Charlemagne. He says, go on, towards the glory. I'm listening to Catherine the Great, Empress of all the Russias. I'm trying not to listen to Jack the Ripper. Stop, stop, not listening.
Francis, whose poll figures have been pumped out?
Well, I think it might be New Labour.
Mm.
Things are so bad that they're now even more unpopular than William Hague. There was some sort of fuel crisis, and the country was held to ransom by a gang of unrepresentative bullies and louts. The cabinet, as I think they're sometimes called. And it's all been... wheels have been coming off ever since. Poor old Blair. Until he can invent a car that runs on hot air, he's completely grounded on hot air.
Astonished by how quickly the veneer of civilization sloughed off in those few days of slight inconvenience, really. 3 days of being quite difficult to get some petrol, and suddenly it's like the siege of Leningrad. No one thinks they can possibly live without 24 loaves of Kingsmill in their hands.
I was watching the Hockenheim Grand Prix, and all I could think of was yeah, Formula One. Where did Bernie Eccleston get the petrol? Who does he know?
Well, having suffered as the pumps ran dry, William Hague had reason to be pleased at the process. He was still able to get around on any one of his 237 bandwagons. He's promised that the party will greatly reduce the duty on fuel. Typical, one minute you're drinking 14 pints, the next moment you're having a slash in public. Andy, to misquote Barry Manilow, who came and he took without giving.
Well, this week has seen a lot of chaff in the press about Geoffrey Robinson's memoirs, and I think we've now got a very clear and believable picture of the conversation that Geoffrey Robinson had with Peter Mandelson about that loan. Basically, what happened was Geoffrey Robinson was having a dinner party, everyone's having a very good time, and he noticed Peter Mandelson sitting in the corner going, oh... And Geoffrey Robinson sidled over to him, obviously, and said, what's the matter, Peter? And he said, here I am, arguably the second most powerful man in the country, leading a glamorous life at the centre of power, and every night I go home to this pokey three-story house in Clerkenwell where there isn't even room to swing a Brazilian. And it just depresses me. And I have this dream of a bigger house in somewhere like Notting Hill, for example. But alas, I know that must just remain a dream. And Geoffrey said, "Now you wipe those tears, my lad." Because it just so happens, by an extraordinary coincidence, that I am a wealthy millionaire. And Mandelson said, "You're joking. What are the odds against that?" And by this very subtle dialogue, they reached an understanding. And, of course, it's terribly important whether Mandelson asked Robinson for the loan rather than the sort of inconsequential question of him having the loan and trying to keep totally quiet about it, which some people could think was a more important issue, really.
I actually think it's all about moving in the right circles, because I was at a dinner party and I mentioned that I lived in a dark, dingy flat, and my mate didn't offer me £373,000. He just came round with an angle poise lamp.
But you sort of feel sorry for Mandelson, because his worst offence, according to this Robinson book, was that he didn't invite Robinson to his housewarming party. That was what caused all the trouble.
Well, he just lent the money for the house. I mean, I wouldn't invite the Cheltenham and Gloucester to my housewarming party.
Also, there's the risk that if Robinson, you know, is a little bit short in the sensitivity department, he might have gone round the flat going, "I paid for that and that and that. All of this. This is me. All of this, everybody."
But there were plenty of problems for the Tories, too, several of them labelled Anne Widdecombe.
Rebecca, why did William Hague have to relax his stance because of a puffed-up joint?
Yeah.
This was an extraordinary sight this week of a whole load of Tory MPs jumping on the Cool Britannia bandwagon, in my opinion, and trying to claim that they'd all smoked joints in the past, and nobody for a second believed it. And, I mean, you just had to look at the photographs of those MPs who'd said that they'd taken dope, and I remember an old jazz musician's phrase, which was, "They couldn't swing if you hung them." And you just you look at these guys and you think, they would not know a bong from something that wasn't a bong.
But they all said they didn't enjoy it, though, didn't they? I experimented with it with an older boy with whom I was temporarily infatuated, but I didn't. They all say, I'd had one puff, and frankly, it wasn't for me, and I maybe thought, I decided not to do it. They never sort of say, "Lord, righteous curry weed."
Well, Tim Yeo did, all credit to him, he did say, "It was quite pleasurable."
No, it's terrific. If only Portillo had said that, we'd forgive him so much, wouldn't we?
Anne Widdecombe has now retracted her call for everyone on dope to be charged £100. Since so many of her colleagues are buying it, she'll do them a bulk discount at £85 a head. In total, 8 top Tories have come out in support of the evil weed. The rest are not sure if they should continue to back William Hague.
Appropriately, this year, the wife of a former Labour leader made her News Quiz debut.
Glenys, why did William Hague have a hairy moment when presented with the bold truth about his chances of being the main man?
Someone to whom I'm related by marriage did an interview this week where he said that those of them who are follically challenged will never be elected as prime ministers, and that Hague and he shared having heads that looked like skating rinks, and that Attlee was lucky he lived in an era where he could wear a hat. So he thinks that it's a major problem that if you're bald, you never get to be elected to be prime minister. To be hair appliance.
One dream out of the window.
Yes.
I've always been rather unkind to people like Alan with flesh-coloured highlights. But my hair is starting to thin rather dramatically, yeah, as the audience here will testify. Testify, brothers and sisters. What annoys me about this is it's not taken seriously as a disability. I mean, bits of your head are falling off. You should get benefit or special facilities or something. And we just accept this as normal, and it's not right. If you woke up in the morning with a couple of ears on the pillow, you'd be mortified. It shouldn't be. It's there for a reason. What do you say, Dad?
Listeners should know that they're pointing. Even Guinness, who's married to a slaphead, is pointing. This makes me feel very good. Tony's terrified because his hair's falling out.
It is.
Absolutely
definitely
terrifying.
Is.
Yeah.
It is. He's got crown pattern baldness. He'd like to have a crown, but he's just stuck with crown pattern baldness.
They sound like his lawyer's crown pattern baldness.
Linda, who's holding a rave to the grave?
Oh, this is the dome in our continuing series on hindsight. The dome is just going to close with no sort of do or anything, not even a bottle of dry sherry or nothing, really. And they're going to have a rave outside. Apparently it's going to be drug-free, which is probably a good idea, because I don't think there's a drug available to humanity that could make that party seem fun, really, is it? Could you picture it? New Year's Eve, people saying, oh, we've got to go, we've been invited. Oh, but it's New Year's Eve, I don't want to go there. Oh, we'll just stay for half an hour. We don't have to go in, we won't take our coats off.
The Millennium Dome is to mark its closure with an all-night rave. There will be loud...
What, though, actually, Simon?
Sorry to interrupt.
God. Shall we do a duet? And then I go and spoil it all.
These boots are made for walking. That was very good. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Linda Smith.
But I still feel bitter from last New Year's Eve with the River of Water dibble. Don't you? Who else was swindled with that one? Thinking, oh, that sounds brilliant, the Thames on fire. No, it was a river of water.
How hard can it be to set a river on fire, for goodness sake?
Superb quality men's crease-resist trousers. These generously cut trousers are beautifully tailored, with one button envelope back pocket, zip fly, belt loops and parallel legs.
Following ITV's daring decision to move news at 10 to 5 past 11, the BBC shifted the 9 o'clock news to 10 o'clock. No wonder our team were puzzled.
Basically what they're doing is just messing us around, so they just move the news every week, just to, I don't know why, the idea being that you have to tune into them, just not knowing what time the news is going to be on, you have to watch them all evening just to get some chance of watching it. They'll probably do random news, you know, 8:48 news. And the BBC feels so guilty about the 9 o'clock news not being on anymore that they say you can watch a special 9 o'clock bulletin with Gavin Esler on BBC News 24. Well, it's 24 hours news. Obviously, it's going to be on at 9 o'clock, isn't it?
Well, the most impressive thing is they've now brought Have I Got News For You over from BBC Two to fill the 9 o'clock slot. So people turn on. And they see this programme called Have I Got News For You? To which the answer is, no, we haven't.
It would be better if all the stations had news on at 10 o'clock. Everyone would have to watch the news. Because that's the trouble with it. There is too much choice on television. It would be better if there was just BBC Two and Radio 4. And then you just listen. Because on Radio 4... It's true. Because the point of Radio 4 is you just listen to absolutely everything from the moment you get up and say, and now on down your way, we go to Skegness for absolutely no reason and speak to some people.
Why is it that I listen to Radio 4 all through the day, like any other mental invalid? I take my baths late and listen to Woman's Hour. And Woman's Hour is always now about dysmenorrhea and surgical disorders of the lower woman.
No, it's about bashing men.
I used to listen to Woman's Hour.
It's all about bashing men. That's what it's there
yeah,
for.
Well, it's very rotten if you're in the bath. I can tell you if you're a bloke. Watching yourself shrivel and listening to people talking about men.
Film competition. To win, all you have to do is answer the following question. Who starred in Enter the Dragon? Answers on a postcard, please, to Bruce Lee Competition, here.
Richard Dawkins, Stephen Hawking, and Steve Jones have all written hugely successful books in which an accessible, popular style is combined with a firm grasp of scientific fact. It's this second element which perhaps Jeremy Hardy hasn't quite got.
Jeremy, why might gay couples soon be saying, hello, Dolly?
You can do a thing now where, because you see, ladies have two X chromosomes, right? And men have an X and a Y, which means men are only half men and half ladies. But if ladies have a Y chromosome, you can take that chromosome No, hang on.
Jeremy Hardy, man of science.
I'm sorry if this is going over anybody's heads, but you take the Y from one gentleman's chromosome.
Now that's
bits.
A countdown you're doing now.
No.
I'll have a Y chromosome, please, Carol.
You take...
Now we're listening, Jed, because this is going to be good.
You take... The gentleman has to divert himself in a private place, presumably, right. To make some into a little flask, which usually has the word sterile on it, which isn't encouraging.
I don't think it does, actually, Jeremy. No, I think just an item of clothing now will do.
All right. OK, so one gentleman donates some trousers, and the other gentleman donates his mother's wedding ring, and you can make a baby in a laboratory or something. Is that it?
Yes, more or less.
Gay babies, isn't it? It's babies born going clang, clang, clang when the trolley...
More than that, you can actually transplant it into the stomach. You remove half a man... Personally, I'd rather have a square meal and get pregnant. never mind breastfeeding. But it's like an ectopic pregnancy. They take away part of the stomach and you take this thing that Jeremy's built in his small back room with the aid of Playboy and a stomach pump converted for the purpose, and you implant it in a bloke. And before... God knows where it comes out of, but I mean... Eventually this thing appears which you love and cherish forever.
Men are going to be so good at having babies. We are. All those years of putting up with women saying how difficult it is. How unpopular have I made myself there? Pretty good.
It'd be great having two gay dads, though. You'd just be taken to musicals all the time. And also, the competition between two dads would be great because you say, Dad, look what Dad's bought me. Look, he's got me rubber dinghy. Oh, he's got your rubber dinghy. I say, oh, right, we're going down to Argos to get you an aircraft carrier then. Good.
Alan, who hopes that keeping abreast of modern design techniques will prove an uplifting experience?
This is Ove Arup, who designed the wobbly bridge, and he's now designed the wobbly tit. He's this one is about female breasts. And yes, I do have them. I don't know why. There was a television program about design, and they came up with this. Apparently, if you have large breasts, wired bras are extremely painful because you get these marks under them. And if you come home without them, your husband knows you've had the bra off too long in the afternoon, and this is extremely embarrassing for women. And these guys have produced... The men who actually did build the Millennium Bridge, or the contractors that did, have now designed a brassiere.
All that guarantees is that they're going to wobble from side to side and make you slightly seasick if you're looking at them.
Only if people walk on them.
I'll take seasick.
Actually go and buy a bra, it's full of the sort of language of restraint and well, like prisons, because you get in, say, Marks and Spencer's or somewhere, they're these little flimsy ones, and they say light control, which is like Ford open prison of the bra. And it goes right up to a padded bra, which is Broadmoor.
And heavy control, presumably, is Parkhurst on the Isle of Wight. You're never going to get out of it. You're stuck there forever.
And you get Jimmy Savile poking about as well.
Who's bagged themselves an environmental disaster?
Oh, bloody hell. This is another one of the government's efforts to make us all care more about the environment. And I'm sorry, I mean, I do care about the environment, but pardon me for washing myself and having the occasional cup of tea. I'm not some vast chemical corporation filling our seas with filth. I'm not Balfour Beatty, who the government is supporting in building a huge dam somewhere where a dam's not needed, which is going to flood archaeological treasures and make people homeless. Pardon me. Yeah. I'm not NATO who's turned the Danube into a toxic soup. And yet the government comes on the news and says, are you doing your bit? Why aren't you having your bath in a plastic carrier bag? Why not use both sides of lavatory paper? And instead of using plastic bags to line your pedal bin, simply pull one over your head and then you'll breathe in and die and then you won't use up any more air. Within a year, you use enough air to fill up enough balloons to fill up a whole bath the same size as the Millennium Dome. Instead of making a cup of tea, why don't you just stuff all your plastic bags into your kettle and that'll cause a fire and kill your whole family. You won't then eat any food or walk on the pavement and wear it out by being individual.
You're frightening
me
now.
I'm fed up with all that.
I'm afraid that's the wrong answer. just having you on there, Jeremy.
Plastic bags, isn't it? We're told we're not allowed to have plastic bags anymore. We've got to put our shopping in our pockets, which is a good idea. It's called stealing. So there you go. So that's the message. Thieve.
Yes, it's a shocking...
2 points.
It's a shocking discovery that UK consumers use 8 billion carrier bags a year. There are concerns that plastic bags filled with rotting food could spread diseases. One health inspector said that at least 2 out of 3 bags could be carriers.
Wet floor. This is not an instruction.
The Olympic Games were held in Sydney to universal acclaim. Most British people, however, can't remember any of the winners, except the British ones, of course, and Eric the Eel.
You don't know about the other two who came second and third to Eric the Eel. They fell in. All these three blokes, one was from Nigeria, one was from Uzbekistan, none of them had seen water before. So they stood by their side of the thing and looked at this blue stuff and said, what's the blue stuff? And two of them leaned over and fell in and were disqualified. The third one leaned over and fell in and struggled to the other end. He was wearing the sort of trunks that I used to have. He had these sort of blue woolen trunks. He hadn't done up the drawstring. And everything was rattling around in there like peanuts in a jar. And all the other people are in these amazing double skins with heads and goggles. And this bloke just turned up in these woolly shorts. Give him a medal, I say.
Probably hand-knitted.
Watch where you pin it, mind you.
They'd be knitted trunks, remember them?
Oh, remember those.
That's why the last 15 metres took him so long. They were sodden. They weighed about 3 tonnes by the time you got there.
Anyway, he's a great hero now. No doubt he's, I mean, like Craig or whatever he's called from Big Brother, he's going to be one of these people who will then have a £1 million contract from... various modelling agencies and things, and he's made.
It's not quite,
well,
Francis.
Not.
He's getting free goggles for life. I think that's it.
Apparently, in Equatorial Guinea, there are no tellies, so he's not as famous as you might expect, because no one knows he's done it. And even his mum was a bit baffled, saying, "Oh, I thought basketball was his favourite sport."
After the heat, Eric took the mandatory drug test. There was no trace of the controversial human growth hormone, but he did test positive for Ovaltine and Horlicks.
if there's going to be a level playing field, you shouldn't be allowed to train or have a special diet or know any of the rules.
Also, I was reading the big problem they have in detecting the drug cheats is... the athletes know when the Olympics are going to be. So they can schedule their drug taking in such a way that by the time the actual event comes round, you know, their blood is clear of any traces. Obviously, the thing to do is to have a surprise Olympics. Wake them all up at 3 a.m. and say, right, we're going to do it now. Then you catch all the drug cheats then.
Because it's not natural to run that fast. You'd have to be on something, otherwise you'd be out of your mind, wouldn't you? To do that. It's not normal. Look at their bodies. That's never right. They've got these huge, great bodies, tiny little heads. We should think their genitals must look like jewellery, couldn't they?
But you can tell the sprinters are on drugs because drugs make you paranoid, and you'd only run that fast if you thought someone was after you.
A footballer has claimed the world record for speed in incurring a red card. Lee Todd was sent off after 2 seconds. Referee Pete Curl ordered him off for using foul and abusive language after he blew the whistle for kickoff, and Todd said, "Fuck me, that was loud." It's only the second time in his entire life that word has passed Brian Perkins.
The other time was during the shipping forecast.
Before we reveal the final...
You want to suck a fisherman's friend?
Jim, who's that supposed to be?
Viscount Linley.
Very good. It's uncanny.
Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
Right, this was very kindly sent in by Anne Bennett of Sheffield. Burglars who found a bag of powder during a break-in in Chadwell Heath, Essex, thought it was cocaine and tried to snort the contents. The bag marked Charlie did not contain a drug, but the ashes of a dead dog. The owner, Dee Blythe, said, "It was horrible knowing they were in my house, but the idea of them trying to get high on a dog certainly made me feel a bit better."
Linda.
This is a cutting sent in by VWA Lane of Guernsey. It's not from the newspaper, it's from one of their daughter's Pokemon cards. Machoke, to be exact. I'm not sure about the pronunciation there. Machoke?
Right.
Yeah. The description of this Pokemon at the bottom of the card reads, "Its muscular body is so powerful that it must wear a power save belt to help regulate its motions."
Alan, was in Wednesday's Daily Mail. We picked it up from the Washington Post. It says, 22-year-old Patrick Lawrence of Dacula, Georgia, was apprehended by police for making love to a pumpkin he had amended for this purpose. Asked by police why he was molesting a pumpkin, Lawrence replied, "Pumpkin? Damn, is it midnight already?"
This was given to me by my friend Len Mulholland, who's a journalist, and it's from the Washington Post, who published a contest in which the readers were asked to supply alternate meanings for various words, and here are some of them. The verb esplanade, to attempt an explanation while drunk. The adjective negligent describes a condition in which you absent-mindedly answer the door in your nightie. Limp, verb to walk with a lisp. Coffee, noun, person who is coughed upon. Testicle, a humorous question in an exam. Rectitude, the formal, dignified demeanour assumed by a proctologist immediately before he examines you. Oyster, a person who sprinkles his conversation with Yiddish expressions. Circumvent the opening in the front of boxer shorts.
The News Quiz of the Year, Part 2, was presented by Simon Hoggart, with Alan Corrin, Andy Hamilton, Jeremy Hardy, Linda Smith, Francis Ween, Edwina Curry, Rebecca Front, Tony Hawkes, Glenys Kinnock, Fred McCauley and Eve Pollard. The newsreaders were Corey Caulfield, Peter Donaldson, Brian Perkins and me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by Debbie Barham, Dave Cohen, Nev Fountain, Tom Jameson, Simon Littlefield and George Poles. And the producer was Lucy Armitage.